Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Will Pruitt, along with Jake Barnett, here for the all-access version of the ProWrestling.net Money in the Bank audio review. And, you know, the big story coming out of this is WWE did it. They gave CM Punk the WWE Championship and let him leave the show. It was a phenomenal match between Punk and Cena, and it ended with Punk leaving through the Chicago crowd. Jake, what were your reactions as you watched this happen?
To be honest, I was completely shocked. I mean, I fully expected Del Rio to cash in as soon as he actually grabbed the briefcase earlier in the show. And, you know, to watch him take that roundhouse to the face and then CM Punk to jump over the barricade and blow McMahon a kiss, and he left through the crowd where his family was seated. I couldn't think of a better way for the pay-per-view to end, although, you know, even up till, you know, 5 minutes before the thing happened, I didn't even think it was possible. So I was shocked and pleased at all at the same time. And, you know, it's great when a pay-per-view goes off the air and you really have no idea what to expect come Monday Night Raw, and I think that's the situation we're in tonight, and it's the first time in a long time where I can legitimately say that I really don't know what we're going to see tonight, and I'm really happy for that.
Well, and it's so different than giving us a cliffhanger that makes the pay-per-view feel unsatisfying and making you tune into Raw. It's not like where TNA a lot of times it feels like you watch it and, yeah, you need to tune into Impact, but it's because the main event was geared toward selling Thursday's Impact instead of actually delivering a satisfying pay-per-view main event. And this was one of the best matches on pay-per-view we've seen in a long time. If you take out the Undertaker WrestleMania series of the last 3 years, I would say it's probably the best pay-per-view match of the last 3 years.
I can't disagree with you. I mean, it's you know, it's one thing to have a great pay-per-view match, and I think we see a lot of good action, you know, in different promotions through the years. I mean, we've definitely seen, you know, some very hot matches in Ring of Honor. We've even seen some great physical matches in TNA, and obviously you can't discount what The Undertaker does every year at WrestleMania. But, I mean, when you have the emotion turned up to 11 like we had last night, and you had two guys in Punk and Cena who obviously delivered in the ring, you know, it kind of shows the fallibility of the rating system that a lot of different pro wrestling websites give matches, because, you know, once you give, you know, Eddie Edwards and Davey Richards 5 stars, what the hell do you give this match, 11? I mean, it's impossible to determine, because, you know, you put yourself in such a corner. But this was definitely my favorite match of the year, possibly, you know, of the last 3 or 4 years. I mean, there hasn't been too many matches like this where we've had that kind of delivery in the ring and, you know, that much hype and anticipation going into the match. So, yeah, kudos to everybody involved.
And speaking of delivery in the ring, I mean, and this was a match where they really made things like kicking out of finishers matter a lot. When you saw CM Punk kick out of not one, but two attitude adjustments, and those were close, great near falls. When you saw John Cena going for that top rope leg drop twice, when you saw these guys pulling out everything that they had, and just they sold the match so well on their faces. The emotion was there, and the Chicago crowd lived and died with every move that Punk made. This was just a phenomenal display of knowing that you're going to have a hot crowd, working them into a frenzy, working them down, and then working them back up to a climax.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, there's a lot of, you know, John Cena haters out there in the forum, on our own website and all over the web that just crap on everything the guy does. But, I mean, you have to put it in perspective that the guy does what he's told. And I think he proved last night, just like he's proven before in his matches with Shawn Michaels and with Triple H and you know, with other people, that the guy can go, and the guy can deliver a story in the ring. He can deliver a decent athletic match in the ring. And, you know, he's willing to put people over if that's what the brass wants. And, you know, I have to say I was impressed with his performance last night. And, you know, CM Punk, obviously, after his great run of the last 3 weeks delivering promos, gave us the match that we'd all been hoping for. And, you know, I don't know how else to explain it other than the match was everything that it should have been. The conclusion to the show was everything that it should have been. And Raw tonight should be, you know, if enough people ordered the pay-per-view, it should be one of their highest-rated broadcasts in forever.
I would say even if people didn't order the pay-per-view, because if you, let's say you watched one of the last 3 weeks, you know that CM Punk is leaving and his contract has expired. And then you look on a website like ours, or you hear from a buddy who faithfully watches Raw, hey, CM Punk won the title last night. Alberto Del Rio tried to cash in, got kicked in the head, and Punk left through the crowd. We have to watch Raw. We have to know what's going, you know. So I think even by word of mouth, this pay-per-view is going to motivate people to watch Raw. And I really hope it does because, you know, after hearing, yes, the ratings were poor last week, and of course they were poor on July 4th, but, and it's not even saying this is a net-friendly angle. This is a great angle. And if not that many people get to see it for whatever reason, then it's a bit of a bummer.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think the issue with the ratings, I mean, we saw that the final segment of last week's show with McMahon and Punk picked up 1.3 million viewers over the previous segment, so I think people are tuning in for that. The overall rating slump for the WWE seems to be, you know, an issue with summertime in the United States, which is not surprising considering most of the country has, you know, 6 months of crappy weather, and this is all that they get to enjoy. So I'm not surprised by a ratings dip, but overall, this is definitely the best angle that WWE's put on in forever, and it's hard to think of a better one, to be honest.
I agree, and let's talk a little bit about just the very end of the match. You had Vince McMahon and John Laurinaitis coming down to the ring. Johnny Ace finally made some on-camera appearances for WWE. I've been dying to see it. And Cena at one point locks CM Punk in the STF, and Vince McMahon says ring the bell, but the referee has his back to him, so he sends Johnny Ace down to ring the bell. John Cena lets CM Punk out of the STF and then punches Johnny Ace. So Johnny Ace can't go down and ring the bell and tells Vince that he doesn't want to win it that way. Gets back in the ring. Punk hits him with the go to sleep for the three count. Vince comes down to the commentary table, steals Michael Cole's headset, thank the good Lord, and says, get Alberto out here. Get him out here with the briefcase. He's cashing in right now. Alberto Del Rio runs out ready to cash in. And then CM Punk kicks him in the head with a very hard roundhouse kick. Alberto's down. Punk smiles, grabs his title belt, and leaves through the crowd. And the show goes off here with Punk raising the title in the air up at the top of the first bowl in the Allstate Arena. Just phenomenal. The crowd was off the charts for the entire match, but especially for that ending. If you were booking the ending, could you think of anything that could have been more satisfying than that?
No, and, you know, I think everybody could probably agree with that. I mean, I just didn't think it was going to happen. I mean, you had so much controversy coming into the match. You know, is CM Punk's contract actually expiring? Are they going to come to a last-minute agreement? And for the most part, with this finish, it's kind of hard to tell. I mean, that's the beauty of it. But, you know, I was fully convinced that Del Rio was going to cash in and walk out of Chicago with the world title with massive heat on his shoulders. And we even got a better finish than that with Punk leaving through the crowd, walking in the concourse with the belt, and Vince McMahon's, tears welling up in his eyes and the dismayed look on his face to close the show. I mean, there hasn't been that hot of an ending to a pay-per-view or a Raw or a SmackDown in forever and ever, and there probably isn't one that you could come up with that could top it, in the short term. So I'm definitely looking forward to Raw tonight, and I couldn't have imagined that what we saw last night was actually going to happen, and that CM Punk was going to walk out of there with the title. It was just a perfect ending to what so far has been a perfectly booked feud.
And beyond that, looking beyond this match at the entire pay-per-view, this was a damn good show. Top to bottom, there was not a bad match on the card. Yes, there was the Divas match, and it was all right. And yes, there was Big Show and Mark Henry, which was decent. But there was not a flat-out, oh, my God, I can't believe I just watched this match on the card. So we're going to start at the top right now and work our way down. Daniel Bryan winning the SmackDown Money in the Bank match to open the show. This is also a match that included Sin Cara being powerbombed through a ladder, which we would find out would write him off because of a wellness policy violation. And a slight reformation of the core before Heath Slater and Justin Gabriel turned on Wade Barrett again. So what did you think of the SmackDown Money in the Bank match?
Well, I definitely think it was the better of the two. I mean, it had a lot better action, even though we had some guys with size in this match with Barrett and Sheamus and Kane. I think it delivered enough high-flying and dangerous-looking spots to earn a reputation or a spot in the lineage of Money in the Bank matches. And, you know, with the way the match concluded, I wrote this in my preview and predictions yesterday that I really hope that WWE would get behind somebody like Bryan or even Gabriel that could be built up as a face over the long term before they cashed in the briefcase. And we got that finish, even though I fully suspected Sheamus or somebody like that to walk out with the briefcase last night. So I was very pleased with the way the match turned out. I think the Chicago crowd was pleased based on their reactions. And there were some great spots in this match. And now, going forward, we have Daniel Bryan, who, even though he hasn't gotten a whole lot of mic time since his move to SmackDown, is in a great position to be built up as a major babyface headed up towards the top of the card, which is something I think a lot of Internet-based fans never thought they'd see. And it's very pleasing because he's definitely one of those guys that deserves it.
I agree. And if I may fantasy book for a minute, they've got a really nice opportunity with Daniel Bryan to do something different than they've done really since Rob Van Dam, and even a little bit different than that with a Money in the Bank winner. And that is Daniel Bryan can basically, you know, get interviewed on SmackDown Friday night and get asked, when are you going to cash in, and say, you know, I'm not ready yet. I want to train. I want to work hard. I want to have my eye on the prize of winning that championship. And when I'm ready, I'm going to, you know, challenge the champion, and we're going to get it done in the middle of the ring like it should be. I mean, it's a lot like what Ring of Honor just did with Davey Richards, building up to his title shot, but I really think that they could have something special with Bryan just saying, I'm an athlete, I come out here and I wrestle, and I want to make sure that I am the best wrestler in the world before I get in there against the world champion, because I've got this golden ticket and I'm not going to let it go.
Yeah, I mean, it would be really refreshing if we had somebody actually go out there and cut a promo where they said, you know, I got a year to cash this thing in. I'm going to use this year to make myself the best in the world or the best in the WWE, depending on how you want to push the angle. But it would be nice if we didn't get a title win. If we got a title win, excuse me, out of a Money in the Bank match from a babyface that took the high road and laid down the challenge. Went into a major pay-per-view with a well-booked angle and walked out of there, you know, a first-time World Heavyweight Champion or WWE Champion, depending on which belt they have him go after. But, I think it would be a refreshing change of pace to see somebody built up as a major babyface through the Money in the Bank briefcase, whereas usually, you know, it's a heel who's taking advantage of a weak champion to cash in the briefcase like we saw so many times before with Edge or The Miz or Jack Swagger or whatever. So I think they have this opportunity now, and I hope, you know, the paranoia has already kind of set in on the Internet that he's going to be the first briefcase holder to cash in and lose. But I hope they take this opportunity to do something long-term with him over the next 9 months to a year where, at the end of it, he's a credible main event babyface that people are legitimately thinking can take the world title even off of a strong heel.
And even if he is booked as the first guy to lose, even if that is the plan, if they said, we're going to give it to Bryan, if they play that angle with him and have him come up just short of winning the world title, you've still made a star. And then you tell the story of, you know what, he got this close. He got so close to the world title with Money in the Bank. I mean, he's a competitor now. he's in number one contenders matches, and he's a guy that can rise up to that level. He proved that he's at that level, so he deserves another opportunity. So even if that paranoia is true, and it wouldn't surprise me, although I still think WWE likes selling Money in the Bank based on the fact that no Money in the Bank winner has ever lost, I don't mind seeing, you know, I wouldn't really mind seeing Daniel Bryan lose. Now, one point they brought up, tonight featured the 9th and 10th Money in the Bank matches in history. Money in the Bank has been around since 2005. Last week, we heard at Destination X that there have been 25 Ultimate X matches since 2002. I mean, kudos to WWE for saving their gimmick more than TNA has.
Yeah, I mean, the first few years of the gimmick, they only had one match, and it was at WrestleMania, and now we've been having, these dueling brand matches where we get an opportunity to see more guys kind of get their shot at showing off what they can do and getting themselves over with the crowd. But I think this Money in the Bank pay-per-view concept is a winner. I think the fans look forward to it as a yearly event. And, you know, I think eventually if this type of solid booking continues on pay-per-views like this, it could replace one of the major four pay-per-views like SummerSlam or, you know, they keep wanting to ditch Survivor Series. And I think this concept could replace Survivor Series if they wanted it to. It's turned out to be that strong, so... kudos to them for holding on to this. And, you know, I think one element that we forget when we're talking about Daniel Bryan as the winner of the SmackDown match is that he does play a pretty good heel if you watch him in Ring of Honor. So if he does come up a little bit short in his, when he cashes in his Money in the Bank briefcase, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw him turn down the road of a heel, because I think he's compelling in that regard as well.
What worries me about that idea is that SmackDown has one babyface right now.
Yeah.
The top of the SmackDown card is, you know, and they can easily change that before then.
They need a babyface to build around.
Yeah.
You know, if he holds on to the briefcase long enough, he might end up on a different brand anyway. So
true.
It depends on how it all shakes out. But, yeah, you're right. If it's on SmackDown, he's definitely better off as a babyface.
And sadly, it won't be Sin Cara that they build around, because we found out this morning that he's looking down the face of a 30-day wellness policy suspension.
Which, you know,
it's hard to look at that, because you go, well, you know, he's following in the footsteps of Rey Mysterio in a way, and Rey's bulked up a lot, and Rey's had a couple wellness policy suspensions in his day.
Yeah.
So it's hard to look at Sin Cara and blame him per se, but at the same time, I mean, this dude was built up. He was built around WWE, gave him a great push coming in. He had subpar matches. And now with this wellness policy suspension, is the writing on the wall for Sin Cara?
You know, it's easy to be a cynic and write him off and say, this is the beginning of the end for him. But, I don't take that tack just because I know how much they have invested in him and how high a lot of the brass in WWE is on him. I mean, there have been a lot of guys who have had to take an unexpected vacation due to wellness violations and come back and resume their push right where they were. So, hopefully if he can get his act together, take this month to take a look at what he's accomplished so far or not accomplished, depending on how you look at it. And reflect on that and come back a better, more focused and willing to learn. Maybe this won't be the worst thing for him, but it all depends on how he takes it and how he recovers. I mean, it could be the beginning of the end, or it could be a new beginning. So who knows?
And there was a moment in this match where it looked like Sin Cara, for the first time, I saw him connecting with the crowd. I mean, it was a little bit of an overblown get-the-crowd-into-it moment, but especially because Sin Cara doesn't have facial expressions to rely on, the shaking and the posing, the shaking and the pointing up in the middle of the ring, I mean, it may have just been that the Chicago crowd was hot and into everything, but Sin Cara and the crowd had a connection last night that I haven't seen before. And to see him do the stretcher job, I was like, oh, that's interesting, when he was just connecting. But I also wanted to update, I just got an email from Jason Powell, the head honcho of ProWrestling.net. There were no injuries last night at the pay-per-view. Every stretcher job, all of it, was worked. He's checked in with his sources, and no one's hurt coming out. So that's some good news coming out of a dangerous pay-per-view.
Yeah, there was a lot of worry on the forums about The Miz selling a knee injury. But if you remember back to the ladder match at WrestleMania 22, Ric Flair did a very similar spot where he took a fall off a ladder and sold a knee injury and then came back out later in the match, you know, in kind of a moment where everybody thought he was going to steal the briefcase. So I kind of saw that as the sign that everything was okay from The Miz, but there are still a lot of people that are worried. So it's good to hear that there were no injuries because, you know, it's never good when anybody gets hurt.
And let's move on now to our second match of the night. Kelly Kelly defeated Brie Bella to retain the WWE Divas Championship. This is the one match. My brother's kind of a smartass, and, you know, I had to watch the show after the fact last night because of work. I avoided spoilers completely, except my brother texted me that Kelly Kelly retained the Divas Championship. I was so angry. This is the match I was looking forward to most out of them all. This is the match I didn't want to be spoiled on, and it was spoiled.
I know. It's tough when you get spoiled, but, you know, this is obviously the cool-down match after the opener. We saw, you know, a very intense 24, 25 minutes with the first Money in the Bank match. And this was a perfect spot for a Divas match because it gave everybody, you know, a moment to cool down before the rest of the show. And, you know, we all know what to expect from these Divas matches, and this was no different. There's very little story for them to work with. You know, these girls need a story because they're not going to be able to tell one in the ring. They're just too limited. You know, it's hard for me to just sit here and hate on them because I know that what they do is difficult and, you know, they're really not trained to the level that, you know, that a lot of the men are coming into the company, and they're most of them are fitness models and they just kind of get thrown into this. So, you know, it is what it is. If they gave these girls some backstage segments rather than throwing them out there in the ring every week and just telling them to go learn on the fly, perhaps we could get some better moments out of them. But as it is, you know, these girls are kind of thrown to the wolves. So I'm not going to crap on them too much other than to say that I wish the writing staff actually gave them a little bit of time. And perhaps, you know, maybe you could actually put the girls out there that can work, because there are quite a few of them on the roster that can, and they all seem to be sitting backstage during most pay-per-views, and that's a shame.
Yeah, it's a bummer to see Natalya and Beth Phoenix, you know, Gail Kim, all of these girls just kind of left off. Okay, whatever. We're not going to put them on pay-per-view. And I think Kelly and Brie tried with this match. It was not a bad shake my head, and I'm, you know, upset Divas match. It just wasn't a good Divas match. It wasn't a good match. So, I mean, that's really all we have to say about it. But it, you know, the match happened. Kelly Kelly's still Divas champion, and it looks like they're going to have to find another lead heel for the division, and I hope that they're talking about Natalya or Beth Phoenix or someone else backstage who can put at least a little bit of a spark into the division. Coming up, we got an ad for SummerSlam for August 14th, and I'm going to be at that show, and I'm crossing my fingers and praying as I watch Raw tonight that somehow the Punk angle's going to carry through to SummerSlam, and I'm going to get to see him. But that is completely selfish and probably, you know, incorrect, but I want to...
Given how the show went off the air last night, and given that Punk's contractual status is still kind of a question mark, I mean, is it possible that we see him at SummerSlam? Of course it is. I mean, this is wrestling, and anything is possible. But, you know, given how dedicated he seemed in his GQ interview to taking some time off, I think you're going to be a little disappointed, but that's just my guess. And it is.
Don't
just
crush my dreams, Jake.
I know. I'm sorry.
All right, in our third match of the night, Mark Henry beat the Big Show in 6 minutes, and this was just two big men brawling and hurting each other. Henry worked Big Show's knee for a lot of the match, and you had Henry actually picking the Big Show up once for the World's Strongest Slam, and Show kicked out. Then he picked him up again for the World's Strongest Slam and hit two big warrior splashes for the clean pin. And afterward, he wrapped a chair around Big Show's leg, went to the top ropes, to the rope, and performed a second rope splash onto the chair and Show's leg. And Show sold an injury afterwards while a trainer came down with a big old cart, like they took The Undertaker off at WrestleMania, and they brought Show to the back. It was quite the segment. I didn't see a clean pin coming, and I'm surprised that we got one here. But I'm happy that WWE decided to put Mark Henry over cleanly in this match rather than say, okay, well, we need to keep Big Show strong because Henry's the guy that they can build right now.
Yeah, I mean, I've been pretty high on what Mark Henry's done on SmackDown since his move over to that brand, and I've actually caught in quite a bit of crap for it via reader email and on my Twitter page and stuff like that. But, you know, I'll stick to my guns and just say that, I'm one of the guys that believes that Mark Henry is somebody who the WWE can make money with. I think the character that he's currently working, is the best that he's ever been. His unpredictable, violence on SmackDown has been interesting to watch, and his upcoming power struggle with Teddy Long is going to be fun to watch. And no matter what you say, about what the guy can do in the ring, if you were standing in front of Mark Henry and he was giving you a threatening look, I don't think you'd be too worried about a Boston Crab. I mean, that guy could clobber the crap out of you, and there's really no doubt about it. And he's one of the few guys in WWE that could elicit genuine fear from people if they met him in a dark alley somewhere. So I'm definitely pleased with the way the match turned out. I didn't expect a clean finish. I knew it wasn't going to be a technical masterpiece, but everything in that match, from the World's Strongest Slam to that splash on the chair, looked like it hurt like hell. And when you're talking about big man matches, that's pretty much all you can ask for. So, I mean, it wasn't a classic by any stretch of the imagination, but, they delivered in a way that put Mark Henry over in a big way, and I think that's what they wanted to accomplish. So, it was good in that regard.
Well, just like we've been talking about on our .NET member exclusive countdown show, which y'all can get on a weekly basis for $5.50 a month, for as low as $5.50 a month, by signing up for the annual .NET membership as your first plug of this all-access podcast. As we've been talking about, Mark Henry is doing a great job as a heel. Really, some of the best work of his career, if not the best. I mean, it's right up there with that run against Undertaker going into WrestleMania 22. And this guy just is showing that he can get it done. I mean, not necessarily, he's not Daniel Bryan. He's not going to have a match like Punk and Cena had. But if you put him in there against a credible babyface champion who can wrestle, I even think if you put him in there on pay-per-view against Randy Orton and just said, you know what, these guys, they're going to go at it, you'd have a good to great match. And that's exciting. I mean, it's everyone. It doesn't take a fantastic five-star, Ring of Honor wrestler to have a good match. It takes all types, and I think Mark Henry, especially at this stage in his career, has matured to the point where he can have a really good match if given the opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen him have, good, his match with Taker at WrestleMania 22 was probably the best of his career. He had a great run as the ECW champion and in the WWE ECW kind of revival. And any time he's been given a chance to go as a monster heel, he's had, some pretty great runs. I mean, he had a pretty good feud with Batista that was kind of delayed by multiple injuries to both men over, a year and a half period. And that's really been the problem with Mark Henry, is that at any time he started to get on a roll, he's gotten hurt. But hopefully with this run, if he's able to stay healthy and they're able to keep the momentum going, they will be able to get some main event matches out of him. And I think he's capable of that because he's shown, in the ring, when he's in the ring with the right person who, is able to play to his strength, that he's definitely able to elicit a reaction from the crowd, and he's able to put on an entertaining match. And that's what I hope to see from him, going forward. Because, I'm a fan of anybody who is legitimately threatening, looking in the ring, and that's what Mark Henry brings to the table.
Now, moving on, we got a Vince McMahon segment backstage, and for the sake of time, I'm just going to skip over that at the moment because we can talk about all the Vince developments a little bit later. But then we had our fourth match of the night, which was Alberto Del Rio winning the Raw Money in the Bank ladder match in 15 minutes and 55 seconds, and this was the lesser of the two Money in the Bank matches. It wasn't as strong as the SmackDown one, and which surprised me because I looked at this one and I said, we have more athleticism here than we do, you know, there were no bases or anything like in the SmackDown one, but those SmackDown guys, and maybe it's just that so many of them were younger people, younger wrestlers that no one expected to be in the match, guys like Heath Slater and Justin Gabriel, they were hungrier to steal the show. But, I mean, the Raw match wasn't bad, but it definitely was one of the lesser Money in the Bank ladder matches that we've seen in recent years.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely wasn't as good as the SmackDown match that opened the show. I mean, but that being said, I mean, I think, you know, the finishing sequence, even with that unfortunate, what looked like kind of a botch to me with Del Rio getting tipped over there at the last moment, I thought the finishing sequence was good. I mean, there were quite a few really tight-looking sequences in the match. You know, it was a match that you could easily get invested in. And, you know, even though it wasn't nearly as dangerous looking as the opening match with all those high spots, I think it definitely told a decent story. And the finish was good, and I think the right guy won the match. So, you know, I'm not going to bag on it all that much, but it wasn't the most exciting Money in the Bank ladder match we've ever seen. But it had some good moments, and we had we had that weird moment at the end with Mysterio getting unmasked, and then, you know, of course, whenever Rey Mysterio gets unmasked, he gives up on winning, so Del Rio was able to steal the briefcase, but, you know, I think we saw an entertaining match, but it just didn't quite meet the expectations of maybe what people were hoping for when they saw the competitors were going to be in it, but I was entertained by it, even though it wasn't as good as the opener.
Exactly, and it just, I mean, and that's one of the challenges of having two Money in the Bank matches in one night is that, well, they're going to be compared to each other. And if one's really good, the other one has to be really good or else you're a little bit disappointed. And, I mean, that opening match, maybe it's because my expectations were lower about it because, I mean, Heath Slater and Justin Gabriel are in a ladder match. Well, they might screw this up, and they didn't. And they took some hard shots and really, you know, really showed why they deserve the spots that they're in on SmackDown. But this match, you had some memorable spots as well. I mean, the beginning of the match was pretty cool with every man grabbing a ladder as they came to the ring. And the match opened with just everyone dueling with ladders.
Yeah, that was interesting. I mean, you know, it was okay. It was kind of fun for a few seconds, but I think that actually kind of slowed the pace of the match down. I don't think it set the tone that they thought it was going to set because, I, judging by the crowd reaction after I watched the show on DVR again after it was over, you know, the crowd reaction just wasn't there for that opening 5 minutes, and I think that's kind of what set the tone for the rest of the match. And you know, I think it might have hurt him in the long run because the middle and the ending sequences of that match were really strong, yet they didn't get the reaction that the opener did. So I think it was maybe that ladder duel towards the beginning of the match that kind of sucked the crowd out of it for a moment because it just wasn't as exciting as maybe the guys who were in it thought it was going to be.
And this match had a lot more spots where all eight men were climbing towards the briefcase or all eight men were battling it out than the first match, which went with the more traditional guy gets knocked out, he's down for a while, all right, let's focus on these four. This match works more with all of the guys in the ring working together, and there were some memorable spots trying to go for the briefcase and ladders everywhere. They also used a lot more ladders in this match, it felt like. And you already mentioned this, but Miz selling the knee injury and being taken out of the match. And that, again, those medics, man, whether they were real medics or Axer medics, they worked overtime tonight with taking out Sin Cara, Big Show, and Daniel Bryan. That was, it was a heck of a night to be hired to play a medic by WWE.
Yeah, you got some pretty good camera time. I think they did a legitimately good job with The Miz because, you know, the way that they were holding his leg kind of legitimately made it look like his knee looked kind of dislocated. And, mm-hmm. you know, the way The Miz played up selling it when the medical tech was kind of trying to feel around his knee, I think that was well done. So, you know, kudos to whoever they got to play the medical staff tonight because they really added to the injury angles in a big way.
And I will say the commentary team, as much as I can bag on them, and tonight they did get on my nerves a little bit, but they even put over how, you know, they actually helped the Miz injury angle quite a bit in this match, and hearing that the team of those three guys helped any angle just shocks me as it comes out of my mouth. So we move on, and we get to Del Rio and Rey being the final two, and as you said, Del Rio snatched the mask off of Rey's face, and the latter fell over, sadly. But it was a lot like Jeff Hardy setting up for that big spear at WrestleMania 17, where it was just, nope, put the ladder back up, get up it real quick, and grab the briefcase.
Yeah, you know, the unfortunate tipping over the ladder, I don't think anybody could have stopped that from happening. It was just one of those weird, you know, momentum moments where, you know, they hit the spot they intended to, and then it just kind of fell apart. But, you know, I think it worked anyway because it added to the suspense with Del Rio having to reset up the ladder and climb up and grab the thing again. So I think it worked out, and you know, Rey and Del Rio being the last two in the match kind of makes sense considering how they've both been kind of vying with Punk for the number one contender spot on the show for the last couple of weeks. So I think it worked. I mean, the middle portion towards the end of this match I thought were very good, and the finish delivered, and the right guy won, and he even got to give a little promo afterwards, which was pretty good. So I was happy with it overall.
And speaking of that promo, it happened after we got a video package on Randy Orton and Christian, which it surprises me when WWE does a video package and then does not go instantly into entrances. Maybe because that's, or at least into a backstage interview with one of the competitors in the match. Maybe this is just me being conditioned to, well, this is the way wrestling is presented. But it always catches me a little bit off guard. But then we got Randy Orton versus Christian, and in this match, Christian beat Randy Orton by disqualification in just over 12 minutes to win the World Heavyweight Championship. Jake, what are your thoughts on this title change?
You know, up until, I think this was like a 12 or 13-minute match, up until the finish, I thought this was a very good match. I thought the timing was pretty good. I thought they had some really good reversals. I thought they had some good near falls. They worked a really good main event pace that wasn't too slow and it wasn't too fast, so that that it was difficult to keep up with the action, and the announcers were able to keep good pace. But you know, with the way that they sold this on Friday on SmackDown, where Christian was playing up the fact that, you know, all he has to do is get Randy to DQ himself and he becomes the world champion. You know, when you already have a guy who's been booked as weekly as Christian as a heel, it's difficult for me to get emotionally invested in the idea that his big break is going to come when the guy he's fighting gets so angry that he gets himself disqualified. I don't think it's a good way to sell people on, you know, on the athletic ability of these two guys, and I don't think it's going to get people too invested in seeing this feud continue. But we ended up getting our, you know, our overbooked stipulation finish with Christian spinning in Orton's face and Orton losing it and you know, kicking him in the ball. So it is what it is. I thought the match up until that point was good, but I was not pleased with the finish. You know, we got to see a Christian title win, which is going to please you know, his fans. But overall, I don't think this is the way that you book a strong heel, if that's really what they intend Christian to be. You know, it's only by virtue of his ability on the mic that it's working at all. I think with anybody else, this feud would be dead in the water.
And I am excited to see now Christian being able to take a different angle on the mic and actually work a little bit of I am the champion into it. I'm hoping, you know, there have been jokes online talking about, well, Daniel Bryan should cash in at the SmackDown tapings tomorrow night and, you know, end Christian's title reign in 2 days. And I'm hoping they don't go that way or that they don't go rematch on SmackDown, but that they build to a big, satisfying match at SummerSlam where these two can really have the match of their feud. It's been a great feud in the ring thus far, and I think that these two guys can pull out a really great, satisfying conclusion. Do you believe that Christian can get more momentum on his side with the title belt, even with the way he won it?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you can turn on a dime when it comes to booking these wrestling shows because, you know, as we've been, you know, conditioned to feel over the years, last week is just an inconvenience in storyline terms. I mean, they can ignore the last 6 months if they want to and go in a completely different direction. So I think if they give Christian adequate mic time and he's able to, be booked strong heading into SummerSlam, there's absolutely, every reason to believe that a SummerSlam match between these two could be compelling and could have a story that's willing, that changes people's minds. And even, I'm looking forward to having my mind changed about this feud going into SummerSlam. And, the rumor mill is churning that Edge is going to be at the fan access show at SummerSlam, and they want to work him in as a special referee for the final match of this feud. I think given the storyline, how Christian captured his first world title could make this this very interesting because, Edge and Orton have history. Edge and Christian have a lot of history, they can go a lot of directions with that. So I look forward to seeing what if they can reinvent themselves a little bit and keep me interested in this feud going to SummerSlam because I definitely think it's possible.
And let me quickly make a comment about SummerSlam fan access. If you're thinking of going, think again. Like, think twice. You're going to be standing out in 100-degree weather. It's going to be hot. You're going to get dehydrated. And unless you're 10 and you want to do an obstacle course, there's almost nothing to do. SummerSlam access is nothing like WrestleMania access. It doesn't have the museum Hall of Fame aspect to it. So I apologize, but I was sorely, sorely disappointed 2 years ago, and I've never quite forgiven WWE.
Yeah, it's been pretty steamy here. We've had the 94% humidity and 98% temperatures over the past 3 or 4 days. So I can definitely sympathize with that. Just going outside is like walking into a sauna. So if fan access is going to be anything like that, I would stay home.
Yeah, LA is just not a friendly place to be, and it's right outside the Staples Center on asphalt. So you've got the asphalt reflecting a bunch of heat up at you. It was not a good time. So, we got a beatdown after this match with Orton just losing it on Christian, RKOing him on the table. They went to replays, acted like it was the end. Then Orton came back and RKO'd Christian on the Spanish announce table again. Now, we've seen all sorts of moves break announce tables, but it seems like the RKO can never break the announce table. And I know that thing was particularly reinforced tonight, which I think is a bit of a swerve. But come on. Let Randy break an announce table with an RKO once, WWE.
Yeah, somebody's got to forget to tighten a couple of bolts in there or something because it never seems like he can get that to work. But, my biggest problem with the post-match beatdown, you can feel free to disagree with me on this, but who the hell is the heel in this feud? I mean, it's so difficult when, Orton's character allows him to, 6 weeks ago dance in the ring, like he's a member of a theater production. And, 6 weeks later he's, hitting people with TVs and RKOing people on announce tables after the match, after he got himself DQ'd. I mean, it seems to me like if you're going to book a guy like a babyface, at least book the guy as a babyface. I don't even know who Randy Orton is. And when you're trying to get a heel established, like you are with Christian, it becomes very difficult when the fans have no idea why they're cheering for anyone in this feud. I think the post match definitely took away from the way the match ended, to be honest.
And I think that's one of the things that WWE hasn't quite realized with Randy Orton is that, well, if he's a babyface, present him as a babyface. If he's going to act heelish, well, then present him as a heel. But, you know, let him, whatever he is, he's going to be the lead that on the show. But at the moment, it's like he's lead heel and lead babyface of SmackDown. And it's bad enough that he's the only babyface on SmackDown, but then he's half heel as well. And, I mean, it's a real problem how he's being presented and what, you know, what does Randy Orton stand for is a big question. And moving on now, just to stop where we, you know, to bring it all back around to where we started, CM Punk's reaction as he came out. It was as big, if not bigger, than the Triple H in Madison Square Garden 2002 reaction. That was absolute insanity in that crowd. And it was, I mean, I had chills watching it. It was breathtaking, sitting there watching Punk walk out to the ring and just seeing the Chicago crowd react to him the way they did.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was one of those once-in-a-lifetime reactions. I mean, there's no other way to kind of describe it. I mean, if you were in that arena, I don't even think you could hear yourself think when that reaction was going on. And if you had turned your TV up in anticipation, I think you might have lost a speaker or two, because that was at least as big as the Triple H reaction in 2002, and it might have been as big as some of the Stone Cold return reactions on Raws of you know, in the late 90s. I mean, that was huge. And, you know, even the Cena reaction when he came out right afterwards, the boos, I mean, they were deafening. It was, the Chicago crowd in that arena was as hot as anybody could have hoped they would be. And the way they've been reacting to CM Punk all night, you know, it was one of those special nights where I don't think you could duplicate it even if you tried. It was really cool to watch.
It was almost like watching, in fact, it was a lot like watching the Calgary Stampede show from 1997 with the entire Hart family, you know, against a collection of baby faces that were heels for the night in a 10-man tag, and just the reaction that Calgary gave the Hearts was so much like the reaction that Chicago gave CM Punk tonight. And, you know, we've already talked about the finish of this match, and let's just now say, tonight on Raw, what do you think happens?
Well, I mean, there has been buzz that Punk is advertised for Raw, you know, whether he shows up in the building or just via satellite or, you know, however they work it, I don't know. But I fully, you know, if Punk's contract is expired, you know, I think there's two ways that they can go about this. Either, you know, he comes in for one night tonight and drops the title in some, you know, in some fashion that allows him to hold on to that heat and credibility, you know, a screw job or something like that. Or, you know, he's just, he's stripped of the title, but he holds on to the belt, and then whenever he comes back, you know, he's got an immediate feud with whoever the world title holder is at that time to hit, you know, hit the ground running again when he's back from his hiatus. I think those are the two options that I can foresee. You know, I'm sure there are a million others that I haven't thought of, but those are the first two things that popped into my head when I thought about Raw tonight.
And I'm going to go a different route. Possibly this is my optimism for those SummerSlam tickets sitting in my sitting around right now. But what I hope and what I think WWE could easily do is an angle where Punk doesn't show up for this week and maybe doesn't show up next week, and it's Vince McMahon coming out and offering Punk a grip of money to show up at SummerSlam and defend his championship. And I think you can really, that it's a good story. It, you know, holds on to the Punk held up Vince McMahon theme that they've been going with and brings him more into the feud. And then you have to have Vince investing in John Cena and saying, come on, you've got to help me out. You're my only hope, you know, not to steal a line from Star Wars or anything. But it really, and I think it would cause fans to actually invest in John Cena a little bit if they're not in Chicago.
Yeah, you know, that's definitely a possibility. I mean, we don't even know what CM Punk's contract situation actually is. I mean, it could, you know, it could end up being very different than either of us anticipate. I mean, there's been buzz that he is in fact going to be in the arena tonight for the show, and you know that he'll make an appearance. So, you know, if in fact he did sign a short-term contract to defend his title at SummerSlam, then, you know, you could get your wish and could see one of the hottest return matches in recent memory. And, you know, honestly, I hope that's the case because, you know, if Punk can give the WWE that much more buzz heading into the end of the summer, I think that's nothing but good things because business generally starts to pick up in WWE storyline terms come the end of summer, early fall. So nothing but good things can come of this because this Punk angle's been as hot as anything we've ever seen in WWE. I mean, even going back to Steve Austin. So very good stuff.
Now, real quick, before we wrap this up, this pay-per-view on a scale of 1 to 10, where do you rate it?
You know, I hesitate to give everything a 10 just because nothing is perfect, so I'm just going to say 9.
I'll even say 9.5. I think, you know, and if you bump up, if the Raw Money in the Bank ladder match was a little bit better, and, you know, if the Divas match had actually mattered, I would be willing to go up to 10 because this is one of the best pay-per-views we've seen in a long time. But where it is now, I've just got to say 9.5, a hell of a show. Order the replay. And now I'm going to get into some plugs for the .NET member site. If you enjoy this type of audio and you want to hear Jake and I on a regular basis, Jake and I talk every Tuesday night on the .NET Countdown audio show. And that's always a good time. We break down the five best and three worst moments of the week. You also would get the 90-minute weekly .NET weekly show that Chris Shore and Jason Pauly, where they break down the news of the week and also often give you tidbits of first-run news that you're not going to get anywhere else, even in print on the website. On top of that, you get Q&As with Jason and Chris and show reviews much like this one of every major show. You get SmackDown, you get TNA Impact, and you get WWE Raw on pretty much a weekly basis, plus pay-per-views. So the value of being a .NET member is immense. And you can become a .NET member right now by going to prowrestling.net, clicking the membership link on the right side of the page. And for as low as $5.50 a month, you can be a .NET member. So on that note, Jake, I'm going to say thank you for joining me and taking this time out of your lunch break to talk a little Money in the Bank. And I'll talk to you tomorrow night, man.
Yeah, we'll see you tomorrow night. Have a good day.
You too, man.